Good evening, I'm John Kenny, and you're welcome to Thursday's Sport at 7. Injury-hit Wales have announced their team to face Ireland in their opening OBS Six Nations tie in Cardiff on Saturday. We hear the reaction from Wales. Katie Taylor's first fight since her Olympic success takes place at the City West Hotel in Dublin. It's part of the National Boxing Championships. We hear from the Olympic gold medalist. It's transfer deadline day. The big news is PSG signing of David Beckham. Tony O'Donoghue gives us the lowdown. And All-Ireland winner John Dively on taking over the reins of Kildare Ladies Football. As usual, we welcome your comments on our text line 51551. You're welcome to Sport at 7. And we have a great competition as well to win corporate hospitality at the Ireland-England game on the 10th of February for you and 11 of your mates. Stay tuned for that. Now, less than 2 days to the start of the Six Nations, probably the most competitive-looking game of the weekend is the meeting of Wales and Ireland in Cardiff. And despite of injury problems, Wales have named a strong enough-looking team with two enforced changes from their narrow defeat to Australia in November. In a moment, we'll hear from Welsh legend Gareth Llewellyn, who joins us on the line. But first, front row Gethin Jenkins says they'll be facing a familiar foe, albeit with some new faces.
We know week in, week out from playing against the regions how good a team they are, and they've got a younger team out now with a lot of new faces perhaps, so it's going to be a tough challenge.
A massively experienced pack that Rob Holley has picked.
Yeah, we've got a bit of experience, perhaps a bit of inexperience in a few positions, but we've blended well and we've trained well, so hopefully, you know, we come to the fore on Saturday.
Have you had the opportunity to look over the fence and see the Irish team and perhaps the Irish pack that you're up against?
Yeah, we've got we always do a good bit of analysis. Played against, you know, quite a few of them, quite a lot of times. Like I said, there's a few new faces in there that we've had to look at and see how they play. Perhaps I haven't played against so many times. You know, they're playing at the top level, so they're going to be good players.
Gethin Jenkins with Michael Corcoran there. Gareth Llewellyn played for Wales for some 17 years. He won 92 caps and he joins me now. Good evening to you, Gareth.
Evening.
And what do you think of the Welsh lineup then?
Well, we're a little bit strapped for players up front really at the moment. The back line's got a fairly familiar look to it and they'll be fairly confident. But, you know, to be honest, we've two of the guys in Gethin Jenkins in the front row and our hooker, we can't get in their own club sides at the moment. So
yeah, Matthew Rees,
so that's a bit of an issue for us. Yeah, Matthew Rees. Yeah. So that's a little bit of a worry in terms of even our experienced players are perhaps not in the form they could be, and of course, you know, new cap in the second row.
That's Andrew Coombs.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, most people in Wales, let alone having not seen much of him play, wouldn't have even heard of him a year ago. You know, he's almost like a Davy Tweedy, if you like. He's come out of nowhere. And, you know, I'll be interested to see how he goes on Saturday because I've barely seen the guy play at a regional level.
Okay, so we don't know much about him, but obviously Priestland's a big loss.
Yeah, Reese is a big loss. I mean, there's been a huge call for Dan Biggar to play from certain quarters in Wales for a long time. And you know, Reese had a huge amount of pressure put on his shoulders and it's formed it a little bit. But the Welsh selectors persevered with him. But I think there's a lot of people who'd be glad to see Reese Dan getting his opportunity. And as I said, the back line looks fairly settled and fairly familiar. I think it's we all know, you know, these games are won and lost up front, and that's where the worry is for me, really.
There is a suggestion that the Welsh team will target, especially the front row, the likes of tight head prop Mike Ross. Is that the feeling in Wales that that's where it could be won and lost?
Well, I think both packs will obviously be trying to get on top of each other, and they may see Ross as you know, potentially a bit of a weak link. But I think if they were going to attack him, certainly at peace, they should have picked Paul James on the loose head. You know, Gethin Jenkins is a wonderful player and does a huge amount of work around the field. He's like an extra back rower for us. But in pure out-and-out scrummaging terms, Paul James is your man, really.
And what about the Irish team? And Michael Corcoran there, speaking to Gethin Jenkins, said he did have a look over the walls to see what the Irish team are putting out. It's a bit of a change from Declan Kidney's point of view and the fact that he's changed things around. He's usually sticking with his tried and tested. But the likes of Gilroy in the lineup, what do you make to the Irish team?
I mean, obviously, I think Ireland have had their injury problems as well. In the pack as well, really. You know, there's a very settled look with Darcy and O'Driscoll in the midfield, safe pair of hands in Rob Carney at the back there. And, you know, Kian Healy and Rory Best have been around a long time, and the back row is very good. You know, Sean O'Brien, Jamie Heasley, they're in fantastic form. So, you know, in the forward battle, I would suggest that Ireland would probably be the favourites to shade that one at the moment. And, you know, we all know what the knock-on effect is then for any set of backs, you know, when a pack gets on top. So, you know, that's where the initial arm wrestle will take place.
It's a difficult one to call, this, isn't it? I mean, it could be championship setting, this game. You know, if you lose this match, you really are playing catch-up.
Well, that's right, and momentum's a huge thing, and we've seen it with Welsh teams in the past who, you know, weren't too different going into the championship. You know, a few people wrote them off, and they got a couple of wins under their belt and went on and won Grand Slam. So momentum is huge, and both teams will be very keen to get a win under their belts on Saturday.
But they do have the whip hand over Ireland recently, haven't they? They won the last three, including that World Cup match and also the Six Nations last year. So they won't be going into this game full of trepidation, even with the injury problems.
No, absolutely. And guys like Mike Phillips, who has been instrumental in those games, you know, he's going to be key for us. We really need Mike to have a win. I think the Irish team will have no shortage of motivation. I actually think the last twice that we've beaten Ireland were fairly fortuitous with referees' decisions and so obviously a quick throw-in that there shouldn't have been. So,
yeah, the illegal ball, yeah. We've
had our share of good luck, and let's hope we didn't come down to that on Saturday.
Yeah, Roman Pott is the referee this weekend. You okay? Happy enough with him, yeah?
Very experienced, and let's hope that the game is decided by the rugby played by the team and not by a referee's decision.
I don't know if you heard it on the news as we're coming in, the fact that Brian O'Driscoll, he's dropped a very heavy suggestion that this could be his last Six Nations. I don't know if you heard that story.
No, I didn't actually.
Well, that's the major suggestion. Now, I mean, he's been a great servant to Ireland, though, hasn't he?
Well, he's a wonderful servant to Ireland, and, you know, it's a pleasure to watch him, whichever nation you support. You know, he's a wonderful player. And, you know, Ireland will miss him. You know, World Rugby will miss him. You know, whenever a player like that who can get you on the edge of your seat leaves the fold, it's a sad day, but we can't all go on forever. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be another young Irish centre desperate to get his chance.
We had Shane Byrne and Alan Quinlan on the line the other day giving their predictions about how Ireland could do. There's a suggestion between three and four wins, and three of them could come away from home against Wales, Italy and Scotland. How do you think Wales are going to shape up in the Six Nations overall?
Well, we've got Ireland and England home, which, you know, England are on a great run at the moment, especially after beating New Zealand in the autumn. And I think, as I said earlier, it really does depend on momentum. You know, if you can get a win under your belt early, then you go into the next game with a huge amount of confidence. You know, I think we've got France up next, and, you know, you wouldn't want to go into that match off the back of a loss at home against Ireland.
Indeed not. Neither team will want to lose. Gareth Llewellyn, thanks for joining us. And to mark the return of live RBS Six Nations coverage on RT2 Television, Radio 1 and RT.ie, we've teamed up with Dove Men Plus Care, the official partners of the IRFU, to give the chance to win VIP tickets for you and 11 friends to attend the Ireland versus England RBS Six Nations clash at the Aviva Stadium on February the 12th. This is a terrific prize. If you would like to be there, you can watch all the action from the best seats in the house with your very own corporate box. Plus, there's €500 spending money for the winner too. For your chance to win, answer this question. True or false, Ireland won the RBS Six Nations Rugby Championship in 2009. That's either true or false. Ireland won the RBS Six Nations Rugby Championship in 2009. How to enter? Well, you text the word NATIONS, followed by your answer and name to this number, 57001. That's 57001. Listeners in the north can also text 57001. Each text, if you're texting from the Republic, costs €1.50. From the north, it's £1.20. Lines will close at midday on Monday, the 4th of February. That's next Monday. Further details are on Airtel, page 195. where the winner will also be revealed. If you're entering, good luck with that. Now, let's move on. And this year's Irish Daily Star National Elite Boxing Championship Finals will be staged at the City West Hotel in Dublin on Friday the 22nd of February, with the early bouts remaining at the National Stadium. The likes of John Joe Nevin, Paddy Barnes and Kenneth Egan will all be in action in the finals, of course, if they qualify. But one certainty for finals night is the Olympic gold medalist Katie Taylor, who faces Poland's Karolina Graszczyk in a four-round contest. Well, later today I asked Katie how her training has been since London 2012.
I've been back for a few months now. I took 4 weeks off after the Olympics, and then we were straight back in and after that. So we got great preparation in over the last few months, and general condition and the technique and all is coming along really well, and I feel like I'm improving all the time as well over the last few months. So I'm just really looking forward to boxing now and stepping back into the ring.
Before you actually take up the mantle of the two fights which are coming up at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, you do have a four-round bout against a Polish opponent. You've faced her before, though, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, actually. She's a brilliant opponent, very, very sharp, very good. She's in the top 10. I've boxed her a couple of times, actually. It's always been a close encounter between the two of us. So, yeah, it's going to be a great contest and a great spectacle, I hope, for women's boxing on the night. So I'm really looking forward to that.
It's a busy schedule, isn't it? I mean, you obviously fought this Polish girl first, and then you've got the two fights down at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. You've got the German champion first. Tell us about her.
Yeah, I boxed her just the one time in the European Championships, and she's very, very strong as well. We're delighted to get these opponents in. It's going to be an amazing show, and she's very strong, very good. It's going to be a tough bout as well, so I'm looking forward to the upcoming bouts coming up.
And they're only 2 days apart between the Nationals and also your first fight down in Dublin.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's just like a competition, really, you know, like any big competition. You're boxing day after day, so it's great preparation for those big competitions as well.
Obviously, with being in with the boxing elite, the men's, I suppose you won't have things all your own way, but you will have things all your own way, because you will be the star of the show when you actually go to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre.
Well, I don't know about that. It's an amazing bill lined up we have on the show, and anyone could be topping the bill, really. So I'm delighted to be boxing on the show with all these other great Irish boxers as well. It's going to be an amazing night of boxing, and I just hope to put on a good performance and get back on track again for this year. People are, you know, always talking about the Olympics, but for me it's gone now, it's in the past, and I just want to move forward and just looking forward to getting back into the ring and hopefully retaining all my titles.
The second bout then you have in the Bord Gáis is the girl from the Ukraine. Do you know much about her?
Any opponent from Ukraine is always tough. The Eastern Bloc countries are always such a strong nation for boxing, so it's going to be another tough fight, another great night of boxing, and it's great to get all these opponents over, and I don't have to travel anywhere as well. It's boxing in front of my home crowd, and in front of 2,000 or 3,000 Irish people. It's going to be like the XL Arena all over again, I hope. Yeah.
Indeed. Listen, I know you're playing it down, you're being a bit modest, but you have become box office, I suppose, since you won the gold medal. Have you coped actually being a gold medalist?
I've been really enjoying it, actually. It's been brilliant the last few months. I've been overwhelmed really with the amount of support I've gotten over the last few months. But I don't really think too much about it, to be honest. I kind of just keep my head down and get on with things, and I just want to continue to improve and to make everyone proud, and hopefully bring home more medals for everyone. That's what I deserve. They've supported me for years and years now, and I'm delighted to be able to bring home a few gold medals for them.
That's Katie Taylor speaking to me earlier today at the press conference to announce the National Elite Boxing Championships, the finals, as I said, move to the City West on the 22nd of next month. Well, it's transfer deadline day. David Beckham, I suppose the big signing today, the big news story indeed. He signed for Paris Saint-Germain. Beckham, a free agent since his contract with the LA Galaxy, ended in December. He had this to say to the assembled media at today's press conference.
I have a lot of experience in the game. 37 years old. Over 13 or 14 championships, trophies throughout my career. Played for some of the biggest clubs in the world, played with some of the best players in the world, and still being successful at 37 years old and still being fit.
Well, Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent, joins us on the line. Tony, are you as excited as I am about all of this?
I've been watching the Sky Sports news coverage since about 9 o'clock this morning.
And Jim White is on. Is he on yet?
No, he's not on yet, although he has been seen on the roof of the Sky Sports news building. The David Beckham story, well, I mean, he is a phenomenon, isn't he? And it's little enough to do with football these days. He's donating his entire salary for the 5 months he will be with PSG to charity, which is a fantastic gesture, in fairness. Now, it's not like he needs the money, I suppose, but Brand Beckham is probably bigger than football, you know. I mean, I've noticed on the Twitter feed an awful lot of females thrilled and swooning at the fact that not only is he good-looking, but he's charitable as well. He's one-legged, he's one-paced, he's deceptively slow, really. And will he get on the pitch, I wonder, even, you know? I mean, PSG are developing a really good side. A lot of money behind them.
He'll sell t-shirts,
He'll sell lots of jerseys, yeah. I mean, but will he be involved? I mean, it's a fairy tale if he will be involved in the latter stages of the Champions League. They have Valencia in the last 16. And who's to say that he won't be involved? Because if he does get the space, there's no one can hit a dead ball like him. And if he can deliver crosses for Zlatan Ibrahimovic, well, you know, the legend of David Beckham, he's won championships everywhere he's gone. You know, it's hard to believe, but he's been, you know, successful at Manchester United, successful at LA Galaxy, successful at Real Madrid, Milan. I mean, he's just extraordinary, you know. And at 37 years of age, that he's still making the headlines. He reminds me a bit of John Terry today, though, because when we were looking at, you know, other deals perhaps happening, it's, you know, he puts on his shirt and he ends up in Paris in front of the world's media, and he'll be probably front page and back page of all the newspapers tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Great timing from his point of view. Balotelli has passed his medical at AC. He's there.
Yeah, that was a bit of a circus as well, wasn't it? When he went to Milan last night, there were almost riots at the restaurant where he was meeting the club officials. He's a soap opera as well, really, isn't he? And I think Roberto Mancini, I believe him when he says that, you know, he really likes Balotelli and he wanted the best for him. And we saw for Italy against Germany, you know, just how explosive and how brilliant Balotelli can be. But far too often, he just showed himself to be not interested and to be, you know, why always me? He courted controversy like other strikers, you know, look for chances in the box. And, you know, I think Man City are well rid of him. And good luck to Milan in trying to make a player of him.
Yeah, QPR, obviously bottom. They've gone for Christopher Samba.
Yeah, £12.5 million. Like, QPR are bottom of the Premier League. They have, what is it? Is it 16?
16 points. Yeah.
Now, you know, Harry Redknapp is, you know, a manager who's saved clubs in the past, but this is a remarkable situation here. Chris Samba on 12 million. He's been looking for Peter Crouch. Peter Odemwinge expects to go there from West Brom, although there seems to be a bit of a spanner in the works there, for 3 million and decent wages. And, you know, they've just signed Loic Remy on big money as well. So
they're going for broke, aren't they?
Odds on to go down. And if they do go down, how can they afford, despite some parachute payments, to pay these wages and to keep these transfer fees afloat? It to me seems impossible. And you could be looking at another club that Harry was involved in, Portsmouth. They ended up in administration.
Yeah.
And you really want to be looking at the English game. I mean, Malaga is a club in the latter stages of the Champions League as well, but they're in big trouble. And the best move, perhaps, that may come up before 11 o'clock deadline tonight, Nacho Monreal, the 26-year-old left back from Malaga, he appears to be on his way to Arsenal fee of about 8 million.
Yeah.
Santi Carzola came from Malaga as well. So, you know, someone else said on Twitter, you know, Malaga fans will look at Arsenal the way Arsenal look at Man City, you know, where they come and swoop and take some of their best players at bargain prices, really. So Monreal would be a great signing for Arsenal. And, you know, you'd have to see Malaga are maybe close to administration. Birmingham City are in trouble as well. Jack Butland, their 19-year-old goalkeeper, he's an England international. He was the Great Britain goalkeeper in the Olympics. He's going to Stoke City,
yeah,
but he's going to be loaned back to Birmingham until the end of the season. So that just shows the fire sale on there as well, and the trouble that Birmingham are in. I believe that they're very close to administration, all their players up for sale. So he's been sold to Stoke, back to Birmingham on loan for the rest of the season. Surprising, because Chelsea were in for Butland, among a lot of others. Asmir Begovic, the Stoke City goalkeeper, is a terrific keeper. So will he stay with Stoke till the end of the season? And a lot of people suggesting that Manchester United may be finally getting the message about David De Gea and will be going for Asmir Begovic at the end of the season.
But no sign of United or Alex Ferguson doing any business in the transfer window.
Well, Wilfred Zaha from Crystal Palace, and other than that, they've done their business. You know, Man United and Man City and Chelsea are almost notable by their absence in all the rumours and all the nonsense. In fairness, Liverpool did their business with Coutinho and Sturridge earlier on as well. Tottenham love a last-minute deal, of course, and a lot of it to do with Queen's Park Rangers. David Bentley seems to be moving there. Jermaine Genius on an 18-month deal. And Ross Townsend possibly on loan. Gomez, their goalkeeper, is going on loan to Inter, or to Hoffenheim rather. And you'd wonder whether there'll be a late. Spurs are badly in need of a striker, and here's where the Gary Hooper story gets interesting. He's a Celtic's striker in great form.
Norwich,
still has a year and a half on his contract. Norwich have had four bids for him turned down. If Spurs are in the hunt as well, obviously the price will go up, and so this one will go probably right up to 11 o'clock this evening. Spurs need a striker because they only have at the moment Jermaine Defoe, and Adebayor is still at the African Cup of Nations, and the striker that they really wanted, Leandro, is not happening, the Brazilian striker. So, you know, between now, what do we have? Three hours and...
off to the roof with you, Tony.
37
minutes. Up
to
the roof of the RTE building. That's where we need you.
Just before I let you go, a couple of Irish. McGeady to Wigan was supposed to be one. That's not happening now. Stephen Henderson was supposed to be going from West Ham to Blackburn because Paul Robinson, the goalkeeper, is going the other way. That's fallen through. And a couple of Wolves players. Well, in that Celtic situation, Kevin Doyle has been linked to Celtic if they lose Gary Hooper tonight. The problem is Kevin Doyle playing for Wolves this evening. So is Stephen Ward. And I was speaking to the Wolves assistant manager, Brian Carey, this morning. He said it's an awful, awful time for them to be playing a match. All the players from both sides were onto their agents all day long. Stephen Ward linked with Nottingham Forest. He's recovered from a neck injury. He plays for them against Leicester.
All right. Thank you very much, Tony. I don't know who that's Tony on the line there about transfer deadline day. Finally, to Gaelic Games. Ladies football, to be specific, and clashes between Galway and Kildare have been a feature of John Dively's career, and he's taking over now the reins of the Kildare ladies football team. Good evening to you, John.
Good evening, John.
Now, obviously a trip out west on Sunday for a Tesco homegrown ladies National Football League Division 2 clash, and you're playing against Galway this weekend.
Yeah, please God, if weather permits, John, we'll travel down on Sunday. So, yeah, it's a novel clash again. Kildare are back down in Division 2. They were relegated last year, so... two guys and myself took over there in December, so we're really looking forward to travelling and you know, hopefully get the league off to a good start for Kildare.
Just a bit of background to your career, Johnny. You won the 98 in All-Ireland medal, beating Kildare. Then you moved to Kildare, lined up for them for a season, and played against Galway in a league match in 2006. So you have a foot in both camps.
Yeah, I have plenty of experience playing for and against both. So, yeah, it's been an enjoyable career on the pitch. And now I'm fully focused on off the pitch and trying to bring a bit of success to the Kildare ladies. You know, never won a Leinster senior title. So that is our aim for the year, to try and compete with Dublin, Meath, Laois and Westmeath. The league will be solely used to try and get 30 good girls together, and hopefully we'll do that and be in a good position come June.
You've had spells with various club teams, and you're also with NUI, Maynooth, Sigerson Cup side. So this is your first inter-county role then, isn't it?
Yes, this will be the first actual inter-county. So I've had past experiences with clubs and colleges, so thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, it's the nearest thing to playing. So, yeah, it's a brand new beginning as such for Intercounty, but the girls have been really positive in training, and they're really enthusiastic and hungry. So all we're trying to do is provide the best coaching possible and facilitate them and, you know, hopefully guide them towards results. And it's been, I suppose, the problem with Kildare ladies has been winning on a consistent basis. So that's kind of what we'll try and implement throughout the seven league games.
Well, ladies football has been, I suppose, compared to hurling, in that fact only one or two counties, or maybe three or four counties, are actually capable of winning an All-Ireland. Where do you see Kildare's future?
Yeah, it's a bit early yet for us to be looking at All-Ireland. You know, our aim would be to try and actually win a Leinster first. That would be step one. For the league, we would like to try and make the league semi-finals. Kerry, Galway, Clare would be the top three teams, and then Westmeath, Waterford, Cavan, Fermanagh and ourselves are obviously vying for that final spot. So, you know, we have a lot of dual players as well, so we have to look at that. Kildare Camogie had a very good year last year and they're trying to win the All-Ireland Junior this year. So right now, I suppose the focus and the aim would be a Leinster. And, you know, if that was to happen, obviously you'd be in an All-Ireland quarter-final and, you know, anything could happen then. But we'll take it step by step, John.
Mm. What about your old team, Galway? Galway Footballers, indeed, which you won in All-Ireland in 1998. How do you think their season's going to go?
Yeah, it's a new year again. A couple of the elder guys retired last year, Porrick and Joe Bergen in particular. So, you know, Alan is really playing with the new deck now. He has all his 07 minor team on board, and Gerry Fahey and Tommy Joyce, both great minor teams that last semi-finals. So that is the nucleus of Galway football for the future. I would think if Galway can maintain Division 2 and really focus on, you know, playing Mayo and Pier Stadium first round of the championship, they have Galway Mayo is going to be a toss of a coin, even though Mayo are probably more advanced than Galway right now in terms of physicality and
in Division 1.
Yeah, and in Division 1. When it comes to a local championship derby, there's nothing between them. And I think if the Galway lads keep their heads down and really, really work hard under Alan, you know, they can turn Mayo over in Pier Stadium come May.
And a quick word about Kildare.
Yeah,
big year for them, yeah.
Big year for them. You know, they've had a good start to the season, the Auburn Cup, and he's found a couple of young guys. They have a very good under-21 side this year as well. I'd be expecting them to try and win a Leinster title. And, you know, again, Kildare will try and maintain Division 1 status and really look to win a Leinster Championship this year, and anything can happen after that.
All right, John, thanks for joining us. That's John Dively there. He's now managing the Kildare ladies football team, and they're out west on Sunday for the Tesco Homegrown ladies Division 2 clash against Galway. We'll take a break. That's just about it. Damien O'Mara back in this chair for the final time tomorrow night, because Sport at 7 would become Game On and transfer over to RTE 2FM from Monday. That's at 7 o'clock. And next week we'll feature Ireland against Poland. That's next Wednesday. Don't forget, here on RTE Radio 1, we've got the weekend sports, Saturday and Sunday sports. Saturday in particular, very, very busy day with Ireland against Wales. And we'll also have those games from Croke Park. It's those two opening matches in Croke Park, the doubleheader. It's Dublin against Cork, and Donegal are playing Kildare from 5 o'clock. That's just about it. As I say, I'm John Kenny. For our BCO was Mary McLaughlin. Our producer was Adrian Eames. On sound was Barry Cavan. And now Arena and Sean Rocks.